Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Johnson, and Judge Hooten, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith, presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome, everybody, to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are here on our fourth of five cases on our calendar today for oral argument. The case is 821-0168, Town of Denmark versus Kenneth, is it Cordes?
Cordes.
Cordes, thank you. And each of you, counsel, will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. At your the start of each of your principal arguments, if you could please state your name and the party that you represent for the record. And with that, we are ready to begin with counsel for appellant.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. This is Kevin Sandstrom appearing on behalf of the appellants, Kenneth and Karen Cordes and DZ Trucking. We're here with extensive briefing, and I obviously have only a limited amount of time to discuss a lot of information. But the most critical thing I think to start off with here is the standard of review and noting that this is a summary judgment decision on cross motions for summary judgment, which indicates a de novo review by this court. But also, I think even more importantly, that the trial court was required to view all facts and evidence in a light most favorable to my clients as the parties against whom a judgment of permanent injunction was rendered. And in my view and reading of the court's decision, essentially the trial court bent over backwards to view the facts in favor of the township in rendering its decision. And that's a real problem here. There is a substantial amount of evidence regarding the conduct of the township over a course of four decades, over 40 years, in which my clients were operating their business on their property with full knowledge and consent of the township. And without the trial court acknowledging that viewing those facts in favor of my client, that could amount to conduct that results in equitable estoppel being rendered against the township as one of the primary legal arguments.
Could I just clarify something? You're not arguing that as a matter of law, your client had a legal non-conforming use of this property.
Well, certainly there's an issue with the collateral estoppel issue and the fact that the township repeatedly admitted and engaged in admissions and stipulations that it was a legal non-conforming use. And I think that as a matter of law, as our first and foremost argument in the briefing, at least, the township has admitted that fact and should be bound by those admissions.
Isn't it a legal issue though?
Collateral estoppel is certainly a legal
issue. Not collateral estoppel, but I'm talking about a valid non-conforming use. Here's the facts as I understand them. Both the township, the town and the county, had zoned this property as agricultural. Am I correct on that? And then those laws were in place appropriately at the time that your client bought this property. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I think that is correct, that the zoning did indicate agricultural use. I think the issue being in this case, the township didn't necessarily recognize or acknowledge what is or is not allowed in its agricultural zoning district until it decided to finally dig out its ordinances, 43 years later. And in fact, after summary judgment proceedings were already completed and the matter was under advisement by the district court.
But as I understand it, your client had these businesses going before the town ever made the admission, I guess, or the statement that this was a valid non-conforming use.
I mean, the businesses were going from the moment that they moved on to the property. I mean, the businesses existed and were operating at a prior location. And my clients moved onto this property and essentially moved their business onto the property.
And freezing the facts for the time that your client bought this property and put all the business into the property, at that point in time, your client did not have a legal non-conforming use. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's true as of the ordinances that the township finally produced post-summary judgment, that the ordinance that they did finally dig out of some vault somewhere indicates that a commercial trucking activity was not a legal use in a agricultural zoning district as of 1977. That, I think, is true.
So yes. if your client has a claim here, it's not on the basis of the legal determination of whether there's a valid non-conforming use. It's strictly on the basis of equitable estoppel. Am I correct?
I think either equitable estoppel or the issues with regard to admissions and stipulations on a collateral estoppel basis, whether there's a factual dispute on that regard.
What actions of the town can you point to that your client relied upon in building this business on this property?
Sure. Well, I mean, they invested in equipment, they invested in buildings, they invested in infrastructure on their property in reliance on absolutely no objection from the township, and also, in fact, affirmative approval on the part of the township to the extent the township taxed the property as commercial and allowed development of adjacent properties as commercial. And one of the biggest things, I think, in terms of a detrimental reliance factor on my client's part is the reality that my clients owned upwards of 80 acres or more immediately surrounding this property. And so the property at issue is about 20 acres. They had another 80 acres, as the court's aware, that was developed into a commercial office park. And that occurred over a time period of roughly 1995 through 2005 and slightly thereafter, when these lots are being rezoned, they're being subdivided and sold off. And I think
I want to ask you about that. So the other property, and then especially since you just said it was rezoned, if other property, adjacent property, was sold and developed and rezoned to permit that development, why does that show malfeasance on which your client relied in considering what the subject property zoning was?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's common if not expected in any sort of development process like this to look at the developer, my clients, and verify whether whatever activities they're engaging in on their property are permitted and allowable. And if there was an issue, if the township had an issue with what was happening on the 20-acre parcel, they could have very easily said, well, we need to deal with either rezoning this parcel as well and or getting you to move to a different parcel because your use is unlawful. And had they done that in 1995 or 2005, the reality is my client was in the process of developing a commercial office park next door. And had the
right, but was it being developed commercially in contravention of zoning?
Well, I mean,
next door property.
It was agricultural property that my clients went into the township, filed an application for rezoning and subdivision, and affirmatively turned it into commercial zoning, and in that process, then created this office park and sold off those lots, and so.
So why can one look at that as saying, well, the subject property would have been known then by your client not to be commercially zoned, and then what we're dealing with is a situation of just non-enforcement? I mean, it seems like you're arguing that non-enforcement of a zoning violation results in equitable estoppel against the municipality from ever enforcing its zoning regulations. I don't think the law recognizes non-enforcement alone as a basis for equitable estoppel against government, does it?
Well, that's true. But the law does say that. But I think the township's conduct in this scenario goes far beyond non-enforcement, because that presumes there's just some illegal activity that they're choosing not to, they're just turning a blind eye to. But in this case, they're affirmatively engaging in interactions with my client that led my client to believe that this activity was permissible on their property and should be allowed to continue. And
so you noted the development and then you noted the taxation. Did the township tax the property?
as a practical matter, multiple jurisdictions tax every property. Properties are taxed by their city or township. They're taxed by the county. They're taxed by the school district. They're taxed by the
watershed. So the answer is yes, that the township taxed them commercially.
There was tax collected and put into the coffers of the township as part of that process at a commercial rate. But getting back to the concept of the development and the point that I was trying to get across regarding reliance, my clients could have simply moved their business to the office park had they known that the township had some gripe with what was going on in their 20-acre parcel. And the reality being, they weren't using the entire 20 acres for the commercial activities. A big portion of the 20 acres was and still is sod fields. And so, you know, you're talking 3 to 5 acres at best is where these commercial trucking activities occur. And had they known that the township was going to object 20 or 25 years later, they could have easily taken one of the lots that they developed in their own commercial office park and moved their operations there. The township sat on its hands for decades and affirmatively engaged in these interactions with my client, never telling them once, and they admit never telling them once that their business operations were illegal. But it's that affirmative interaction with my client that is the wrongful conduct here and leads to an equitable estoppel claim. And that's what the trial court really failed to view in terms of evidence in a light most favorable to my client, instead being extremely dismissive of all of this just vast array of evidence of these interactions between the township and my client, where even in official board meetings and planning commission meetings, they're affirmatively stating on the record that the operations on my client's property were lawful, a lawful nonconformity, and permitted to continue. And then years later, they suddenly decide they want to change their mind and get a permanent injunction against my clients. It just reeks to me of a proper scenario of equitable estoppel. And I realize the case law certainly informs that this is a high hurdle, but you know, what more can my clients do to prove, especially on a summary judgment proceeding, that there's evidence of wrongful conduct on the part of the township in this scenario when they're engaging in all these different aspects of conduct, going so far as to acknowledge and approve that use in their comprehensive plan, multiple iterations of their comprehensive plan, the most supreme document, a planning document and land use document of any municipality, as directed by statute. I mean, statute dictates that the comp plan is the superior document and it trumps zoning ordinances. And the district court ignored that.
May I ask you this? So you're talking about inferences, et cetera, and how the facts should be read. Both parties move for summary judgment, and you believe that the facts are undisputed by virtue of your motions and that you're entitled to judgment as a matter of law. And on your motions, of course, the facts would be read in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. So I'm trying to figure out, what is it that you think? Are you suggesting that at trial, despite your motion for summary judgment and your argument that you're entitled to judgment as a matter of law, that there, a trial is needed on something and there's some evidence that needs to be presented that wasn't before the court?
Well, I think to the extent the trial court's determination turned on whether the township's conduct should be viewed as quote unquote wrongful conduct, that is apparently the disputed issue of fact that crystallized and distilled out of all of these briefings on summary judgment. And to the extent the district court made a determination that all of this vast array of evidence does not constitute wrongful conduct, I think that's where the factual dispute lies. And where it would appear there needs to be a trial on that issue.
Mr. Sandstrom, I have a question about your collateral estoppel argument. You say in your brief that the township stipulated to the legal nonconforming use. But what was the form of that stipulation? Was it done orally or in writing? And if it was in writing, was it, you know, a stipulation, formal stipulation signed by both parties, or was it rather a matter of briefing or what? Can you?
I think it was done. My understanding is what, frankly, it was done orally and perhaps even discussed off the record initially in a bench conference. And then the parties go back on the record and essentially say, all right, we're all agreeing or the court announces everyone's agreeing that this is a legal nonconformity and we're going forward on that basis. And so it was on the record during the evidentiary hearing orally rather than any written stipulation.
So we would have to look at the transcript of a hearing to see the content.
Right. And I did try to point out the particular portions of the transcript record in a okay. portion of my brief, and I apologize. I don't have it off the top of my head right here.
Was there
this
any
argument, but it is there. And then the entire rest of that hearing proceeds on that basis and with that assumption. And then it's noted in the court's ruling as well that was stipulated to.
Excuse me, I may have frozen for a minute. Forgive me. If so, a quick follow-up question. Was there any express statement by the parties then as to whether the agreement in the stipulation would be limited to that case, or whether it would be binding on the parties for future purposes or anything of the like?
I don't think the record states one way or the other, whether it was limited to that case or applied to both cases. But the argument that we've, and I apologize, I'm out of time, and I'll just briefly answer this one question, that as we argue in our reply brief, my view is in this scenario, which is, I think, a fairly unique scenario, where there are actually two parallel cases going at the same time by the same parties with identical legal and factual issues in play, that stipulation in the criminal action should apply to the civil action. The parties should be able to know and understand that what's happening in the criminal case is also going to apply to the civil case, and my client is not subject to changing the entire playing field of this dispute from one case to the other. And that collateral estoppel should be assumed to attach to the second action in that scenario, to that stipulation.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. Court, my name is Robert Alsop. I represent the respondent, Town of Denmark. My co-counsel is Paul Reivers. He's with the law firm of Iverson, Reivers & Condon. We're here today asking that the court affirm the decision of Washington County District Court Judge Juanita Freeman issued on January 5th, in which she granted summary judgment in favor of the township on all counts in this action. Now, there's primarily three issues that have been briefed and submitted to this court for consideration. If you have any questions on those, feel free to bring them up. But I want to make sure I answer all your questions with regard to each of these arguments raised by the appellants in this appeal. I also want to raise some material facts very briefly. Obviously, the briefs contain the facts, but I wanted to highlight a couple of things. Number one, like many cities and towns, Denmark Township, which does have zoning and planning and zoning authority within the township, does enforcement on a complaint-based basis. In other words, they don't go out looking for violations. They don't go out and see how properties are in compliance. What they do is generally respond to complaints by residents within the township with regard to activity they consider to be illegal or contrary to the ordinance. Kenneth and Karen Cordes purchased the property in 1977 and started a landscaping business immediately, which did have a commercial trucking component. One would assume that they knew or should have known whether that landscaping business with that commercial trucking aspect to it was allowed on the property. And admittedly, this activity went on for many, many years before any alleged wrongful conduct was purportedly committed by the township as alleged by the appellants.
Well, let's talk about that, because I mean, not only did they open and obvious with this business, but they were actually working with the city to subdivide that property into commercial pieces of property, and they were getting taxed as a commercial property. Why, with all of that interaction between the town and the Cordes, why wouldn't that be sufficient to establish equitable estoppel? This isn't just a case of non-enforcement, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. Couple of reasons here. Number one, it's a very high burden on them to establish the wrongful conduct. Wrongful conduct has been reviewed and considered in multiple cases and generally never found to exist. This is beyond just non-enforcement. However, it is not wrongful. Entering into arm's length development agreements for adjacent property, which has nothing to do with the subject property, does not trigger any obligation or responsibility with regard to the township to take any action with regard to the subject property. There is no representation in the development agreements regarding the subject property. The allegation in the brief seems to indicate, well, the township knew that they were using their commercial vehicles to perform work on the adjacent property. That's all speculation and impression. And with regard to the taxing, the taxing is done by the county. They're the ones who collect it and distribute it. The fact that it was a commercial property was in fact true. They were doing commercial activity. That was an appropriate taxing decision with regard to that property. Now, whether I don't think that triggers any wrongful conduct on the part of the township or the township officials with regard to those issues. The other, you know, if we're going to focus on the equitable estoppel, it's a combination of the non-enforcement. There's this allegation that the board members admitted it in board meetings. That is a product of years and years of use by the appellants as a commercial business, and the town officials either assuming or being told by someone that it's a legal non-conforming use. That is a mistake, and a mistake is well identified in the case law as not being sufficient conduct to trigger an equitable estoppel claim. Or use it against the township in enforcement of its ordinance. The other examples identified, we have the arm length agreements. We've got the approval of a large pole barn on the property. Again, I'm not sure why that constitutes wrongful conduct. It's the normal processes of a township to approve or permit buildings to be constructed on the property. The issue as to what it was going to be used for or what the current use was on the property, there was no representations that I'm aware of in the record that would indicate wrongful conduct on the part of the township officials other than to approve the permit for a building.
Or with regard to the development that was built on the property, and subdivided from this 20-acre parcel. Is there anything in the record indicating that formal proceedings were brought to change the zoning for that development?
I believe the zoning was changed in those developments, yes. For those developments, yes.
All right. Would the Cordises have been part of that proceeding?
Well, it was their property, so yes, they would have been. But how that does not implicate any wrongful conduct on the part of the township with regard to the subject property. I just don't see a connection there between entering into a development agreement with a property owner and he has adjacent property that's not the subject of that development agreement.
All right. It was at any time during this 40 years period of time, did the Cordises ever ask for a conditional use permit or make any attempts to have this 20-acre parcel rezoned?
There's nothing in the record, Your Honor, that would indicate any requests for anything with regard to the subject property other than the request to rezone it in 2018. So there was a request at that time. I believe, and I'm not sure if it's in the record or not, I think it might have been in the criminal matter, that there was a request at one point that it be changed from agricultural to rural residential. And that's what was done. If you look early on, it was an agricultural district and it did become rural residential. And I think that was done independent of anything with regard with the developments. So those are the only two actions I'm aware of.
Can we talk for a moment about the comprehensive plan issue? Sure. I think the argument is by statute, there is a when there is a conflict, I think the argument made by the opponent between the two that the comprehensive plan controls. Okay, there are two comprehensive plans, the 2030 and the 2040. And I think that they point to the uses, the existing use of, in those plans of the property, which was commercial.
Right.
So I have a couple questions. Does one comprehensive plan substitute for the other, or are both still in agreement? I mean, in existence, I don't really know how that works, if it makes sense to look at both a 2030 or 2040, or if a 2040 substitutes for the 2030. And that's just one sort of question about how they work. But then secondly, why would there be a comprehensive plan that defines, that, you know, describes unlawful use of property in its existing uses? I mean, and that's confusing to me. Yeah, because I think your response as well just describes a use, lawful or unlawful, but why would there be such a thing?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, to answer your first question, they do substitute each other. They do replace comp plans from time, you know, sequentially as they go through in time.
So is the only extant comprehensive plan the 2040 one? Is that?
The latest one would be most controlling, yes.
Okay, so we would be looking at that one, presumably, if this issue were,
right,
if we're trying to decide this issue. Okay, go ahead.
To answer your question, there were multiple maps in the comprehensive plan and are part of the record. And it's an interpretation of those maps as articulated by the township and accepted by the district court as being one map that they are identifying is where the property is identified as commercial. That shows what the current use of that property is, whether it's legal or illegal, that shows what it is. It does not indicate, Your Honor, a actual determination of policy or anything like that. It's a factual statement of what the current conditions are. You look at the other two maps showing what the proposed uses are going to be into the future and what the anticipated plan is for the township. Those are the ones that indicate it to be rural residential. So that's the distinction between the maps as indicated by the district court. That is not a that is not in conflict with the zoning ordinance because it does call for rural residential. So
in the comprehensive plans and it has future zoning. Do the comprehensive plans include maps of current zoning, or is that just simply not a map that's presented in the comprehensive plan?
I don't think it had that map in there. I think it had a current use map. Which some people would assume might be the current zoning process, but that's not the case.
And did the comprehensive plans themselves and the guts of the comprehensive plans describe what the attached maps mean?
I don't think there was a written description as to those other than the caption underneath them. I think the affidavits that we submitted to the court explained what the nature of the maps were. And the district court adopted that interpretation or those facts and determined that is the case and that there was no conflict.
Were there any contradictory affidavits as to the meaning of what those maps were?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, no. I think there was argument to the contrary, but factual arguments, no. And then our other argument in our briefs with regard to this issue, Your Honor, is that to the extent there is a conflict, it's not this court's duty to fix that conflict. It is within the discretion of the township as to how that should be done. And it can be done by either an amendment to the comp plan or it can be an amendment to the zoning ordinance.
It wouldn't be appropriate for a court to allow a township to enforce a zoning ordinance that was in conflict with the comprehensive plan, would it? I think the Mendota case on which you rely came to this court on a petition for writ of mandamus. And I think, I think the petitioner was requesting a particular revision to the plan, but it seems like we've got a different procedure here.
Yeah, exactly. I think, going back to the original issue is whether there is a conflict between the plan and the zoning ordinance. At least in the eyes of the township, there is no inconsistency. The proposed maps that are submitted with the comp plan for future use of the properties is consistent with the zoning ordinance and the zoning restrictions for the subject property.
I asked Mr. Sandstrom earlier about the stipulation in the criminal case, both its form and its content. Do you agree with his answer to my question?
That's my understanding, yes. Yes. Okay. I would raise the other arguments, however, though, that was not technically an issue before the court for consideration. It was not adjudicated by the court.
Well, that's kind of the issue, isn't it? I mean, But seeing what the stipulation says, isn't that necessary to determining whether it was litigated or not?
Well, in our view, order dismissing a matter, a criminal matter, and an omnibus hearing really doesn't create a legally binding obligation for either the prosecutor or our office to argue to the contrary. In fact, the double jeopardy doesn't come into play, number one. Additional charges could be brought once the new ordinance or the old ordinance was found, additional facts become available. I think the courses were recharged with the same crime. So the point being that it's not a binding adjudicated issue that's binding on the parties.
Well, again, I feel like that's to be determined. The district court, Judge Hoffman, made a conclusion of law. I'm reading paragraph 2 on page 36 of the addendum. Based on the record made in this case and controlling law, it is undisputed that commercial trucking activity, qualify as a prior non-conforming use. And that seems to me to be directly contrary to the declaration that Judge Freeman later ordered, as well as her conclusion of law. So, I mean, they aren't they basically, those two statements are 180 degrees different, but because there is more information about the applicable.
Well, the way I read the judge's order, as indicated, says the state does not claim that there's any code, ordinance, or other law in effect in 1977 prohibiting commercial trucking.
Excuse me, can you tell me where you're reading from, please?
Page 31, 32 of the addendum.
I think it's paragraph 6. I see it now. Okay. Go ahead.
So the point being, absent an ordinance to the contrary, we could not argue either way is my point. And for purposes of simplicity, we conceded to the fact that there was no prohibition or ordinance in effect at that time, that clearly the use had increased over the years as evidenced by the complaints by the neighbors. So it was a concession that was made by the township for purposes of streamlining the procedure. It was also necessary because they did not have evidence to the contrary, so they could not argue to the contrary. I think there was a mention of the Washington County ordinance, which was applicable to this property, even though a copy was not presented to the court. It was still, there was a reference to it in the criminal proceeding. So I guess I disagree that there's a final adjudication of that issue, short of a concession, which should not be binding on parties in subsequent actions, unless it's indicated in the stipulation or agreed to by the parties.
A couple of questions. I know you're out of time, but first of all, do we have before us the transcript of the probable cause of the omnibus hearing, or just the judge's order from that?
I don't believe so.
So the transcript that would show that stipulation is not was not submitted. Is that right?
By either party? As far as I know, as far as I know, it was not. No.
Okay, and. At the time, oh, I also just, is the record clear that the so-called missing 1977 ordinance, which was found in a vault, was actually at the public library? Is the record clear that it existed at the public library?
It did, yes. That's okay. I believe that's in the district court order. She mentions that.
Thank you.
And just clarify that too? Because was it also found in the town's office safe as well, so that it was found two places? Is that's how I understood it?
That's exactly right. Yes.
All right.
And I don't know if it's irrelevant, but the court actually pointed out that because it was in the county library, I think it was available to both parties by statute. So it was an oversight by everyone, apparently.
Is the fact of a pre-existing non-conforming use, is that a fact or a statement of law?
It's a statement of law based on the facts, but I don't think that's a question in this case anymore. I think it's been conceded that there is no legal non-conforming use here. I don't know how you can have one.
The reason I'm asking is because the statement was made by the chair of the town and in the criminal proceeding. But are we bound by her statement of the law?
That was a mistake, whether it's factually or legal. It doesn't matter what it was. It was a mistake. I mean, we all know right now that it is not a legal non-conforming use. I don't know how you can dispute that. I don't think she should be bound by mistakes or things she assumed based on 20 or 30 years of use by the appellants of this property.
Thank you. Thank you for your argument, and counsel for appellant. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. What I take from this is the township should be permitted to engage in a comedy of errors in multiple circumstances, starting from when my client bought this property, even through legal proceedings, and never face any negative ramifications or consequences, and can still just get an injunction against my client, which is really frustrating. But to hone
in. Tell me if I'm wrong on the collateral estoppel. The way I read that, I mean, there were two complaints brought by the township, a civil and a criminal one, asserting, in fact, that it is unlawful and unlawful use. In other words, the township is not recognizing that complaints of either one, that there is a lawful pre-existing non-conforming use. They're saying it's unlawful. And then in the criminal case, they conceded, in the way the district court at least wrote about it, is for purposes of the motion, that it was at one point a pre-existing non-conforming use, but then argued that it had been either abandoned or expanded upon, and the district court decided in probable cause, no, neither of those facts was true. And yet there's the civil case continued that it's unlawful. What's inconsistent? I mean, I understand, like, at the state conceded for purposes of the omnibus that probable cause hearing that there was a prior non-conforming use, but that's not what they alleged in their civil complaint, or even really in the criminal complaint, is that this is unlawful.
Well, I think they really do allege in their criminal complaint that it's unlawful based upon a pre-existing use that had been discontinued. I mean, that was their entire theory of the case from the start of the criminal prosecution up right through the hearing, which is why they stipulated to it as part of that hearing. And I think that's, and I can't remember now every nitty-gritty detail of the civil complaint, but I think that was their theory in a civil respect too. I mean, I received a letter from the town attorney months before either of these actions were ever started, when we were bantering back and forth via letters, competing letters, where town attorney admits that this was a legal nonconformity, and we were arguing about whether that use was discontinued or not. And so, I mean, this was even the town attorney making these statements in written letters to me leading up to this litigation. And so this was, you know, pervasive. It was not a one-time admission by the township. It was repeated in meetings, in letters, in litigation. So it is a critical issue. But I do want to go back to the comprehensive plan issue, because I think that's critical as well, because it goes not only to the level of wrongful conduct on the part of the township from an equitable estoppel perspective, but the mandates of the statute on the Municipal Land Use Planning Act that say the comp plan trumps zoning. And so what is the view of those facts, that existing comp plan of Denmark Township from 2009 and then again in 2019, how should the district court have viewed that in a light most favorable to my client? It should have viewed it that when a township puts in its comp plan in a map saying my client's use of its property is a commercial use, that is an admission on their part that use is legal.
I don't think so. I think you move for summary judgment claiming there's no on the ground of the comp plan. Now you're claiming that you get the inference in your favor and all facts in your favor so that you win on summary judgment. I'm not sure that's right. You said that there are no material disputed facts with respect to the issue of the comprehensive plan and that you're entitled to judgment as a matter of law in your supplemental motion, I think, unless I'm mistaken.
We did. And okay. I will continue to assert that the comp plan is binding and the assertions in the comp plan are binding. And I would argue that at a trial, if this matter got to a trial on what may or may not be disputed facts. But the reality is the statutes mandate that, the Supreme Court's authority under the Mendota Golf case mandate that, and the town has not provided any authority to the contrary as to why that doesn't constitute a conflict between the comp plan and zoning.
Well, what evidence did you put in summary judgment that the existing use map that you're relying on reflects wrongly reflects current zoning?
I think you hit the nail on the head yourself, Judge Smith, when you asked the town's attorney about it, that it's common sense. It's how can this not be something? Why would a township put an illegal use in a map in an approved comprehensive plan? This thing is vetted and reviewed by dozens of people, multiple jurisdictions, and put through a public hearing process in getting it approved by a final vote of the elected officials of the town. How can
But they might put in, I'm sorry to go over for one second.
Yeah, and I apologize.
There might be a prior non-existing, it might be lawful, but not in accordance with zoning because it was, you know, a prior non-consistent or prior existing non-conforming use or something like that. So, I mean, there could be, I read you're saying that the map must mean zoning and the zoning is inconsistent with current zoning.
Well, I think the map is an admission that it's a lawful use and the town agrees and admits it's a lawful use, because why would you approve a comp plan that makes note of unlawful uses and then not do anything about it?
Okay. Great. Anybody else?
I have one question.
Okay.
I'm hearing your arguments, but as I understand, equitable estoppel against a government entity is a rarely used remedy. And as part of your burden of proof, you have to show that your client relied upon actions of the town, and non-enforcement isn't enough. And as I understand it, your client was operating this business since since they bought the property. How are you able to show, or where in the record does it show that your client relied on specific acts of the town in building this business or putting this business on this property?
First of all, frankly, as we laid out in our appellate briefings, The town is arguing a reasonable reliance issue on appeal, but that issue was never litigated at the trial court level. Neither the town never brought up a claim that there was a lack of reasonable reliance, and the trial court's order doesn't talk about a lack of reasonable reliance as a basis for finding that our equitable estoppel claim failed. It was not litigated nor ruled upon, and it simply wasn't a part of the record. And so, no, I can't point to part of the record to demonstrate that issue because it wasn't raised at the trial court level and it's not before this court, other than the fact that the township tried to raise it inappropriately.
But wouldn't you, as part of your burden of proof, have to show that?
Sure. And I think what I addressed in our briefing as well as today is the detrimental reliance is the fact that my client created a commercial office park next door. And had they known that they couldn't rely upon the township's affirmative statements that this was a lawful use, they would and were told it was unlawful, they would have moved next door to their commercial office park and run their business there.
Except, I mean, and I want to, if I may, Judge Smith.
Yes, go ahead.
In that your client, apparently, as I understand it, was a party to the rezoning of that parcel. I mean, how can you say there was reliance when your client knew that that parcel, in order to be developed, had to be rezoned?
Because at that point, my client had already been operating their commercial business on their existing parcel for 18 years. And so had they known, and frankly, I just dealt with this as a city attorney very recently. And I mentioned this kind of concept in my earlier argument that it is common, if not expected, that when a development application like this comes in, that the city attorney and the city or town are going to look at any adjoining parcels of the applicant to look for zoning related issues or violations and deal with them. And frankly, I dealt with that in one of my own cities as a city attorney when a development application came in to expand and build a new building in an office park. I looked at the adjoining parcels that were not part of the application and found a zoning violation on that property, pointed it out to the applicant and said, you got to fix this as part of the approval of your existing application. I mean, it's commonplace.
Yeah, but how can you construe that as being approval that we have to go through a whole rezoning process on this parcel? How can that be read as an approval of your client basically not getting the property rezoned?
Well, like I said, I think it's express and admitted knowledge on the township's part. And there's so many admissions on the township's part that they knew about this activity, acknowledged it, and essentially gave it their blessing for 40 years, but then decided to change their mind.
Thank you. Thank you both very much for your arguments and your briefing. The case is submitted. We'll